Obviously, you see that the county has to have a county board of mental illness. I assume that everybody in here has one of those and knows what we're talking about. Anybody in here a chair of those boards? I don't want to hear this either. Can I go with the baby?
Sorry, I'm going to record you.
All right. Now I'll have to be careful what I say. And we'll talk about some of these things. So this is the laws that deal with this. And some of the questions was about alcohol committal, and those are different. That's in a different section. That's in 34, and I'll touch on that a little bit at the end. But these are the laws that we're talking about today. So the first question, I think, is probably the question that all the counties have is, what do we have to pay for when something like this happens? And kind of the basic things you have to pay for, the person that is being committed or is mentally ill, that's subject to a hearing, and they're being held involuntarily. And that's what we're talking about, is basically involuntary committals of people being held. We're required to provide a court-appointed attorney. There's some hearing fees that are involved. There's an admission fee that you have to pay if you put a person into a facility. And there's per diem fees. And then we only pay for county residents. So one of the questions is, can we commit? We can't commit non-residents, but we only pay for our residents. So if you're in Minnehaha County and a person from Beetle County is down here and they're having an issue, your board can do a mental commitment of that person, but Beetle County would ultimately be responsible for the payment. So another county can commit a person from Beetle County, but Beetle County would have to pay.
Can I ask this question?
Yeah.
I get this question brought to me a lot on other counties, so that if they have that happen where their county is the county that's committed, so then the hospital comes to them, and the statute says, yeah, the county residency is the ultimate, they're not able to get that transition through, so like the hospital won't go to the other county necessarily, and then if they pay for it, the other county won't reimburse them back. So what would you suggest to somebody that's struggling with that? Just
That's a good question. So the county that commits the person, based on what I've read, doesn't have any obligation to pay for a non-resident. So if the hospital bills you and it's not your resident, know it's not your resident, there's no obligation that you pay that.
So they just need to kind of just continue to say, no, this isn't ours, bill this.
Right.
Okay. What if it's out of state?
If it's out of state,
the person's out of state.
I don't know the answer to that question.
They're out of state.
In Minnehaha County, we flatly do not pay for non-residents, whether it's another county or another state. You can save the hospital.
So, but that would be my advice to the county, and the same with Beetle County, is that if you get a bill and it's not a resident, it's better not to pay it. Because once you pay the money, are you ever going to get it back? I mean, you'd have to go to the other county, and then the other county would have to pay you back. That's how that would work. The hospital's not going to give you the money back and then bill the other county.
Yeah, and you lose your position of strength.
Right.
If you pay it at the county, yes. The other county says no, right?
Exactly. As soon as you write that check, you're kind of stuck. There is a law that says that. But it doesn't say that we shall pay. It just says that we can pay, and then we can get reimbursed. So I think it sets up a system where we are allowed to get reimbursed. And I can look at that law. I brought the law book because I knew there would be questions that I don't know the answer to. But I did read that statute yesterday, and I didn't think it said shall. I just thought it just set up a mechanism for the county that made the payment. If they made a payment for a non-resident, that there's a mechanism for them to get that back from the other county where they are a resident. There's a mechanism for that to happen.
Us who aren't just very
Yeah, shall means you have to pay.
Right.
And I didn't think the statute said that, but again, I can look that up here at the end. But those are the statutes. But I don't think it says just because you commit them that you have to pay. That it should. They say the county of residence has to pay. And that statute that you're referring to talks about a mechanism for the county that made the payment to get it back.
Are you talking about the hospital bills or the committal fees? The fees to commit the person, like the QMHPs, those fees. Because the hospital bill gets usually, because we're from Lincoln County, where a very behavioral health is at. We don't normally pay the hospital bill itself. We only pay for Lincoln County residents. But we are required to pay the QMHP when they're put into the 24-hour COBRA. And then we seek reimbursement from the other counties.
Right. So you're right. So the process that you have to go through, so the process to commit somebody would be that you have a petitioner. Right. Then the chair of the board would then meet, and they would bill you. Usually the chair of the board would bill the county. And if you find out that that person's from another county, that's stuff that you're going to have to pay, because you have a contract with the QMHP or whatever, the Qualified Mental Health Professional. So you're going to have to pay that person in that process. But once they're committed, so I'm talking about like the Yankton, the court-appointed attorneys and things like that, would probably be paid by, should be billed directly to the county that they're a resident of. But You're going to have to pay for your process, which I think then you can recover from the county.
And we do recover from the county. I mean, we do a billing process, and we do recover from the other county, those fees. But, I mean, from our experience, the hospital bill itself, for while they're there, goes to the county of residence.
Yeah. And, like, the counties where these facilities are, Lincoln County, Yankton County is a big one. So they have these hearings, and that's where the attorney's appointed. So once they're committed, so those counties have that in place, but they're billed back to the county of residence. But I think what one of the confusing part is that sometimes they just bill it back to the county that committed them, because generally that's where the residents, but that's not always the case. So if Beetle County committed someone, but it's a person from Minnehaha County or Lincoln County, then Yankton should be billing Lincoln County for that hearing, if that's where they went. So it does get kind of confusing after they're in. But you can have those hearings locally. So each county has the ability to have that hearing. But I don't know that any counties really do that, except maybe Pennington out west. I don't know if there's anybody here from Pennington.
Me.
Do you know where they have those hearings out there?
Yeah. Lincoln does.
Yeah,
here.
Lincoln does them.
It's
and
only
Yankton
if they go to Yankton, and you know the number that go to Yankton anymore are very limited.
Yeah. Anybody here from Yankton County? All right. So you know that's why your state's attorney is part time, because he makes $1 million doing all these hearings. Right? Yeah. So they have hearings quite often in Yankton, and they bill us, or they bill the other counties back for that. I think they have people in their state's attorney's office that just do that, because there's so many of those hearings. So you got prosecutors getting rich too there.
So what's the difference? Like, we have it where, you know, they sign off the form, the Board of Mental Illness for the 24-hour hold commitment, but I don't know that the hearing process takes place. How does that differentiate from the hearing? When they're signing off, the Board of Mental Illness chair will sign off on that commitment based on that evaluation of QMHP. How is that differentiated from the hearing? Is that the first process that has to take place
right
by the chair, board chair? So that chair board is just saying, yes, we agree that this person needs to be committed. And then there's a...
Right, then there's a hearing after the placement. I think it has to be within a certain amount of time. I think it's 72 hours that they have to have a hearing whether they should continue placement. So when they get sent to Lincoln County or Yankton, so we do that process in Beetle County. They get committed. That's done locally. then it goes to Yankton, and that's where they get the court appointed attorney in the hearing.
Do they ever start the whole process over again? That's what we're finding. So if you do the 24-hour hold in our county, and then they get committed, and they started taking them to Vera instead of Yankton, and then they start that 24-hour hold all over again. So we'll have a person, and so I'm wondering if this is being done the right way. So we'll have someone that is a place on 24-hour hold in our community, and then the board of the chair board signs the commission, becomes an evaluation. Chair sign a board of wellness signs to commit them. Then they go to Sioux Falls to Vera, and then they start the 24-hour hold process all over again, where they do the QMHP evaluation, and then do they keep the hold, and then the illness. Where my understanding is once that we're doing that step twice.
Who's placing the hold in Sioux Falls?
The Lincoln. Yeah, they'll have the Lincoln.
Well, I thought when they feed them on that 24-hour hold, then they QMHP feed them, and then they have to do the hearing. I'm not sure that the petition starts in York County to do it. Then they come to Sioux Falls, where they're seen by a QMHP, and the hearing takes place.
But they've already been seen by a QMHP in our county, and the board knows their own story, so I got to them. And then they go to Sioux Falls, and then they place the hold there again. They start the 24-hour hold all over.
But I don't think we start a new petition. Not to my knowledge. I mean, I think your petition.
They do.
Your petition starts it.
Yeah, and I can't speak to what they do, but there is a. They have to go through a process to do an evaluation. Usually that's a 72-hour window. I don't know about a 24-hour window when they get it. But they can hold them for 3 days before they have this hearing. And they have to get them attorneys and things like that. That person is advised locally that you can get an attorney and things like that.
A lot of ours don't even go to the release 24 hours again, and then they're released back. They don't even always have the hearing. They've already had the ordinances in our county. They go to Sioux Falls, and then 24 hours, a lot of times they're released back to our community without
county hearing.
So it's almost like, that's why I'm questioning, is are we doing this? Are we duplicating some part of the process? Is it actually going to the hearing process? We'll get the bill, and they would release without a hearing. They won't make the 24-hour process again, and the Vera system, they let go. So
it might not be the 24-hour. It might be just something that a Vera has in place that they do an evaluation of that person and determine at that point. They redo the QMHP thing and say that we don't think there's any reason to hold them. They're not required to hold them for 72 hours on that petition.
Are they required to have a hearing?
Not if they determine that they're not going to hold them. So if they determine they're not going to keep them, there's no reason to have a hearing because you're not depriving that person of their liberty.
Okay.
So they can be released then right away.
Well, we struggle. We disagree a lot of times with it because we struggle if they come back in our community and run down the street. You know, that's where
right.
We start with.
But a lot of times, like...
Does that mean you're
angry? And I think, like, even in Yankton, that after that 72 hours, a lot of the people are released. I don't think a lot of the people are continuing to be held. Most people are held to get readjusted on their meds or make sure that they have local facilities that are... You know, a lot of the people that are committed in from Vito County are... people that are already residents of Bradfield Leary or the Center for Independence, those are the people that are being committed at the IMPACT program. So these people already have mental illness, but they're not taking their meds or something, and then they're having issues, and they get sent down to Yankton or to a Vera, and they get adjusted again, and then they send them back. And I don't know if you have a formal hearing then in Yankton about that when they're going to send them back. I think they do some type of an order that says they're going to release them because they don't have any other... Their conditions that warranted them being committed aren't present anymore, so they release them back to the community under the supervision or monitoring that whatever they feel appropriate. All right? That's good. All right. We kind of talked about this. Can you get payments back? So if you make payments on behalf of this, some of this is lienable, or you can get a judgment. So these are the laws that allow you to do that. So you can lien a judgment against the person that was committed for some of these costs. Any questions about that? Any issues with that? What are the rights of the patient? So these individuals have a right to a court-appointed attorney, and they have a right to have a hearing. So those are basically their rights. So we kind of do this as an emergency process. It's kind of an ex parte process where the chair of the mental illness board is the one that makes the decision to commit them. But they do have a right to get an attorney. They have a right to have a hearing on that. And they can request that the hearing be back in front of the board in the committee and county. That doesn't happen very often. I mean, I've been in Beagle County for, it seems like forever. And I've had one time that I've had to do this, and it was probably 15 years ago, where they actually had the hearing in front of the local board. So if we had to do that again, my local board wouldn't even know what to do. They'd be like, what do you mean we have to have a hearing? But most of those hearings are in the county where they're placed. All right, so there's some questions about the mental health board. What do they do? One of the unique things about the mental health board is that the chair of the mental health board is appointed by the presiding circuit court judge. So the circuit court judge in my circuit is Judge Stoltenberg. He's from another county, but he's the only person that can appoint the chair of the mental health board. And so the county can't remove that person. They can't do anything. And that's appointed by the circuit judge. The other two members are appointed by the county commission. In Beadle County, we actually did something different. We have a chair and a co-chair appointed, and we got them both appointed by the presiding judge in case one of them wasn't available. Because we ran into issues that way where our chair wasn't available, so what do we do? So we had our presiding judge appoint two, and they're lawyers. A lot of times in your county, the magistrate judge may be the chair of the board. That's kind of common practice, is the magistrate judge that's in your county or in your area is the chair of the mental health board. Like, I think Coddington, is it Patrick? Is he the chair?
Our chair's
not. All right. So he's not the one. I think he is in a couple other counties in the circuit, as well as Howard. Magistrate Judge Howard is a couple as well.
I got a question. Do all counties have a mental health board?
All counties are required to have one. You can combine with other counties. So all counties are required to have one, but you can combine with other counties. So if you want to get together with another county, but the presiding judge has to appoint the chair, and then the other counties can appoint the other two members.
I don't remember appointing members to the mental health board, so I'll check in on that and see what we do.
Yeah, and I would say a lot of commissions, ours are in our general policies every year, so when county commissioners adopt the general policies in January, that generally speaking, they don't ever read. Those appointments are in there. Right, Jill, do they ever read that? Yeah, they're in there, but do the commissioners actually read it? Yeah, so that's when a lot of this is kind of done perfunctory that way. These individuals are supposed to be appointed for a 3-year term, and they can be repeatedly appointed again. And it's usually done by the county in that general policies or at the end of the or beginning of the year. When you appoint the weed board and those things, that's what it is. And you also have a board for substance abuse as well.
Yeah.
So right. So the only problem you would ever have, if you have the presiding judge appointed, the magistrate covers your county as the chair. The chair can do the petitions. So the board really doesn't have any role unless there's a request for a hearing. Then your board has to meet. So if you're in a county that didn't do this, you would have to appoint two members if you had to have a hearing. But like I said, most of these counties don't ever have a hearing. The only person that ever does anything usually is the chair. It's just kind of the way it works. So, and like I said, most of your chairs are your magistrate judge, and you might not know that, but that person is appointed. And then a magistrate judge, one benefit of having the magistrate judge as the chair is that they don't bill you. So they do that as part of their job. They don't bill the county. Like in Beetle County, I think that we pay them, what, 90 or 100 bucks an hour or something? And we get billed a minimum of 2 hours. So ours are attorneys. So when they come out to do a committal, we end up having to pay them about 200 bucks. But a magistrate judge doesn't do that. They don't bill the county back. The other board members get paid as well if they ever have a meeting.
In our county,
this is exactly the same thing Beetle County does, is we pay community counseling a certain amount of money, and we get certain services for free for doing that. All right, so here's what your board does. They have to hold these hearings, which don't happen very often. They have to consider, the chair considers the commitments. You can combine with the other. The chair can place a hold on a person. So the chair does have some power. I mean, so what happens in this process, and you ask, is that a person comes in, anybody can be a petitioner. So they can come in, fill out the petition, and ask them for someone to be held. The chair will review that petition, determine whether they believe that there's enough information in there to hold this person, and then they have that person held or detained. Usually that person is picked up by the police and put in jail. I know that some places do that different, but in Beetle County, that's how it works. They're put in jail. Then the qualified mental health professional comes to the jail. They do the evaluation and determine whether that person's going to go to a facility. But this chair can place a hold on somebody and order the police to pick them up. What facilities in the state are available? I think we talked about the two. There's the state hospital in Yankton. There's Avera. I'm sure there are others. I think there's one West River in Pennington County, but there's no one here. Meade.
We're here from Pennington. Ron, do you know? It's right on campus. I don't know. We think all our people in Yankton.
Yeah.
Yeah, regional, which is now mine. You know.
They won't take the meeting.
At all?
I don't think so. We have to take our mental health people.
St. Luke's and Aberdeen does too, I believe.
Yep. St. Luke's and Aberdeen.
And they have to be approved by DSS. So any facility can do this. You just have to be approved by DSS. And I'm sure there's a long list of things you have to meet. But the two I'm familiar with are Yankton and Avera. I don't think we've ever sent anybody to Brown County, have we? So, but I know there are others in the state, but those are the two. So, that was a question I got. So.
Yeah, from Pennington County, Ron just pointed out that we have a bus that travels from Pennington County across the state twice a week, hauling prisoners primarily. also will take mental health patients as the agent.
Okay.
So, deliver. A lot of times they say that the mental health patients need the bus back to the office.
Yeah.
Where are they held in
the
air? Where is that first
scene?
Or
is it
between other
waiting rooms? I don't know if they go to the current capture room or from depending on the nature of the situation.
Yeah, I would say most of the people are held in custody until they go to the facility if they qualify. But this is kind of how does this happen? This is what we talked about. There's the petition, and your state's attorney or someone else designated by the county commission is supposed to help people fill out the petition if they have some assistance. So what we've done in Beetle County is we have a online form that's available to anybody. It kind of tells them what they need to do to fill this form out. It used to be, my office used to get called a lot in the middle of the night to commit an individual, or Friday afternoon at 5, it seemed like it happened. And we had to pay people overtime to come in and do that. My office was typing up the petition and doing all this stuff. And so we came up with these forms that you can easily write in. We make them available to anybody. They're online. So that we kind of had taken ourselves out of it. We still have to be available to help a person or to advise a person. So if a person has a question, hey, I have this family member that is in this situation, what are my options? And then we can tell them, here's the process. You need to fill out this petition. It's given to the chair of the mental illness board, and then it goes from there. So the state's attorney's office is obligated to provide assistance in this unless the county commission designates someone else. So my office is involved in that process. So I prepared all the paperwork for everybody to do. But since I prepared that paperwork, we don't get called very often anymore. And it's most of our committals are done by community counseling or Center for Independence. They know the process, so we don't get called a lot. We don't have very many by just a family member of committing someone. But it does happen once in a while. It's reviewed by the chair. Again, the chair makes a determination whether that person should be detained. If they are detained, and generally before they're brought to the jail, they have to get health clearance. So they go to the hospital and say they're okay, and then they get held in the jail. Some hospitals have the ability to hold people. Ours does not, so they have to be brought to the jail. Then the mental health professional comes over, determines whether they're... they need to go to Yankton. If they do that, then there's paperwork signed and they're placed at that facility, and then that hearing process starts. So they'll get their attorney, they can have a hearing process if they're being held. But like everybody says, that's the thing, is that they beat the bus back. I mean, that's what happens, is a lot of times it's a couple days at most at their place because they get their medication adjusted, they get them back into the situation where they're gonna be able to function, and they get sent back. Yes, sir.
A lot of Yankton citizens might say they stay in Yankton.
Yeah. We try to do that. We just say, here's $50, go have some fun. All right, any questions on that, on the process? Everybody familiar with that?
Unfortunately, in Pennington County, we have a very active mental health board. They meet on a regular basis. The chair has been there for number of years. That's a pretty good job. And we have those members to be appointed come to our commission meeting early in the year so get a chance to meet who desires to go on. I don't think in the 2 years I've been on the commission now, I don't think we've had anybody that's been appointed that didn't actually apply themselves. So we seek out the applications from people desiring to be appointed to. And we have them meet with the chair so that they understand the time commitment that they're taking on. So, because it is a big time commitment.
Yeah. Do you know if your board has hearings?
They do.
So I think that's right. I think across the state in the larger counties, they're probably a little bit more active than the smaller rural counties. And it's just, that's kind of the way. way the state works, and so I don't think there's anything wrong with either way, but the larger counties, you're just dealing with a lot more people that come through, so you're right, probably being on the board in Bennington is a lot different than being on the board in Beaver. Do you even know who our third person is, Joe? Who is it? Dang it, she knew it. Good job, Joe. All right, so there you go. So what's the criteria to be committed? And you can look, so the petitioner has to indicate, basically they have to have a mental illness and they have to be a danger to themselves or others, and there has to be something in the petition to indicate that they're going to harm themselves. So a lot of these individuals will indicate they're going to commit suicide or they're going to go out and hurt somebody else. Maybe they have hurt somebody else. There was a law a couple years ago that changed in a domestic violence situation that a person could be committed out of that situation. But that's kind of where they're at. So this is what required. But the basic thing that the chair is going to look for is, are they a danger to themselves or others? And is that danger related back to a mental illness? And that's more of what the qualified mental health professional will do, is determine whether there's a mental illness there and look at the history. So that's kind of the process. And this talks about the state's attorney is required to help in that process. All right, alcohol and drug committals. So this is a little bit of a different process. So a lot of times, these aren't the same boards. They're not supposed to be the same people. This is a different board. This board is appointed by the county. Generally, though, a circuit judge will make this commitment. It's not the board that actually makes the commitment. It has to be done in court. Counties really don't have a lot of involvement in this, but there is a process for this. But it's different than the mental illness process. So the counties aren't as involved in this process. This is the involuntary committal process of the alcohol committal. In 3420A is the statutes that deal with the alcohol committal process. So in this process, it's kind of the same in that a person can make an application and say this person has they're a danger to themselves or others because of an addiction to a drug or alcohol. That's what the petition is done. Once that person is served with that, if they refuse to be committed to a treatment facility, then this involuntary process begins and it goes in front of a circuit judge, and the circuit judge will determine whether that person needs to be committed.
So with that, so a lot of times what we deal with is people, why they are being committed, they threaten suicide or harm somebody else because of alcohol, and it seems to go through the IBC involuntary commitment process. Should this be something we should deal with? If you believe that it's alcohol or drug related, we should be looking to this process instead?
Right. So the other process, it requires a mental illness. So that qualified mental health professional needs to find that they're suffering from a mental illness. If they just think they're suffering from alcohol addiction or drug addiction, they wouldn't commit them under that mental illness. Then it would come over in this involuntary committal. But really, that process is different because there's not a board chair that signs it. There's not a qualified mental health professional or an alcohol and drug counselor that says, yeah, they are, and then you send them. You can hold them until they're sober, but then they have to be released unless you do this process of involuntary committal.
Who initiates
it? It could be anybody could initiate this process.
And they have to pay for that person that initiates it.
They would, so the county's responsibility is that the person being committed would get a court-appointed attorney. So the county's responsibility is that. The people that are going through the process to commit generally have to have legal representation. So we in Beadle County, we'll send them to an attorney that knows the process, that will do the process for them. But the county doesn't have any obligation. I don't have an obligation as a state's attorney to do that. And the county doesn't have any obligation I'm aware of that we have to do that. We have to pay for some stuff. But we might have to pay for the committal, and there's a if you read these statutes, statutes, it's kind of a weird thing, but if they're indigent and stuff like that, we might have to pay for the committal. That's something, but this is just a different process. So an attorney will generally represent the petitioner. They'll go into circuit court. The circuit court will appoint a person to represent the person that's going to be committed, and then they'll have a hearing and determine. And we actually just had one in Beetle County here. It was a juvenile, and the judge didn't commit them. The judge said, it was a parent trying to commit their kid, and the judge said no, that they weren't going to do it involuntarily.
So, if I'm understanding, this process takes things a little slower.
Yes.
Okay, so then if by the time the person sobers up and isn't threatening anymore, then it kind of stops, so to speak. It's not
even. They can still be involuntarily committed.
Okay.
That would be still. So if they still have a dependency on the drug, they don't have to be suicidal or a danger at that point.
Okay.
But they do to be held. So for us to hold them, we would have to make that finding. But a lot of times these individuals aren't being held in jail. So they're still out. And they're angry because their family members trying to commit them for a drug or alcohol thing. I would say you guys have watched that show Intervention, right? I mean, that's, no one has ever seen that show. My wife's the only one that watches that show. I don't know if she's planning something for me. But a lot of times they want to get the commitment from the person to go. So there's a process, and that's why this doesn't happen very often, because they're trying to get the person to voluntarily sign themselves in the treatment. I think the only place in South Dakota that will hold them is Keystone, that if you can commit them involuntarily. But I'm not even sure that's true. That a lot of these facilities, even if you get an involuntary commitment, I don't know that they will hold them. If they come in there and they want to leave, I don't know that they're going to prevent them from leaving. I don't think they have that mechanism in place. But so this gets kind of complicated. But just for purposes, a lot of times this gets confused with mental illness hold. This isn't the same thing. The county's obligation isn't the same. We really have very little obligation in a drug and alcohol committal. If you're interested or bored out of your mind, read 3420A and you can read all the good things. There's like 100 different provisions in there, so something to do this afternoon. So we talked about this. So what's the county's responsibility? Court-appointed attorney, possibly treatment, mostly done in circuit court. So that's different from the mental illness process where we send people and we have to pay for it and things like that. This is the maximum treatment period is 90 days. I thought that was interesting. So you can involuntarily commit somebody to a 90-day treatment program for alcohol and drug abuse. All right. I think I can't answer all the questions that were given to me, so anybody else have any? Yes, sir.
Is there any rule of thought by the judicial system or law enforcement that's trying to change the way mental health folks are taken to jail instead of taking to jail being placed in a home facility?
There's mental health task force right now. I served on the Chief Justice Jefferson's mental health task force. I mean, you know, that's process is so simple, especially for your county where you're supposed to pay them. Another thing that's being done is a Verity Care County Justice pilot project. What it is the a Verity Care where I think there's 16 counties on the pilot project. It's more focused
16,
on
16.
Yeah, and so I know our county is one. I'm not sure if anybody else did, but that e-care, what that is. So those of you guys don't have it, I would definitely give a look up that e-care, give them a contact, because what that is when a law enforcement is on the scene for somebody that has crisis behavior, they have an iPad now, and they can directly contact on the spot a counselor. Okay, and that counselor is going to do the crisis. You know, that law enforcement is still going to do the crisis intervention CIT, but then that counselor is going to start that immediately, that QHQ process to kind of say, okay, what is this person's option? So we're working, yeah. So, yes, there's work done
there. That's awesome. I mean, that's the same for each of
yeah.
It's all the way that the child program that they try to do that.
And then that they will contact the local communities to help them. But what we recognize, especially in West River, your county, if someone's in West River, your county knows from the community mental health center. So this really has a focus definitely on rural by all counties benefit to get that individual evaluated on the spot versus your county and holding that person, you know, for 2 hours kind of thing and then within the jail. But in addition, as yourself as a county, what do you have for a place that's already being there where a person could be held? Ideas we have one in our county because we have a local treatment center, substance abuse / ESR mental illness. So within that facility, we have one room designated for the holds. Well, you know, our people don't know they come in one time, so you can't have a crisis. But so our jail doesn't get utilized. But other places, do you have an ambulance? Not a voluntary ambulance. Do you take a look within your community? What do you have? You know, if you have a domestic violence shelter that maybe could have one room, capacity, staffing. You know, it's really hard, especially in the rural community. But look to see what you have where it's already 24/7 that has somebody there that maybe. For a rate, the county could have additional person there. And then also you have to look at mitigating that risk of it being the person who did something to make sure that they're protected. So that's kind of how, you know, we've done that. Like I said, if you look at the two processes, you've got how a criminal is treated, same way with the involuntary commitment. They're just sold, you read your rights, you're called by the law enforcement, you go to the jail. What's the difference? You know, and then you're told you can have representation. So traumatic that then can be so traumatic that the next time, what we have found, the next time that person is struggling, they don't call. They don't go through the process because that was so traumatic.
The sad part about it all is that the law enforcement are the ones that are initiated. They're the first ones there. They're the ones that have to call the social workers or whoever mental health stuff. And then they have to wait, so they have, where else are they going to do
it? And that's where
and like I like that you're looking for other places, but didn't you say once a long time ago that you have to have a physician that backs you up on this?
Okay. You have to have a QMHP.
What is it?
Sorry. I always hate when people do acronyms too. Qualified Mental Health Professional.
Okay.
That's an issue has to be evaluated. So what we found, one time when I spoke with the police officer said there, well, yeah, the community mental health center will send us somebody to do an evaluation, but they're not licensed and they're not QHP. But they might be licensed. They have to have a QHP test. So if that person comes down to Madison from, I think it's Huron, is that where you're?
I thought it was.
Okay, when they come down and do the evaluation, and then they say, oh, yeah, that person has to be committed. Well, then they have to go in and call the QMHP. You know, we think this person has enough to be committed. Then they have to go call the QMHP, who then drives down and the sheriff.
And in the meantime, they have to hold them.
Yeah. That's where the iPad process is that you need it, you get it right there, right then. Our law enforcement has applied and received city law enforcement COPS grant, a 4-year COPS grant. And what we started was it's a co-responder. So this law enforcement sole job is to actually is going to be also licensed, and is their sole purpose is to take the suicide calls, to do the evaluations, because we have so many suicide is significantly rising, but we have so many suicide calls that it's they're going to use the COP grant. And so basically this law enforcement, his sole responsibility is to respond to those calls, then also to give support to the law enforcement who may be the first time seeing them, like a tragic call or situation. And that's, I think, starting January. It's a 4-year program. So if you guys, there's grants out there. That means that law enforcement who's trained, that's really kind of their sole purpose. Instead of calling one law enforcement, it's one specific person, and that's what they're fully trained in. Rural counties, maybe it might be more difficult to justify that cost, so conjoined with other counties. With technology that we have today, I think we can make a lot of progress. So there is change.
I'd like to, from Pennington County, I'd like to extend an invite to anyone that would like to come out. You know, we're pretty proud of our CARE campus, which provides a number of diversion programs, the Sheriff's Office, the court system, state's attorney, and public defender, all collaborate with in order to try to, instead of putting people in jail, if they're willing to seek treatment, put them in the CARE campus. We have quite a medical staff that's on the county payroll at this point in time, too. We also have a voluntary portion of that, especially for alcohol and drugs, that they can walk in. Now, granted, we can't, once they walk in and maybe see the program, maybe they don't like it. They are free to walk back out. They just aren't free to go back out and pick up the paraphernalia that they had to drop in the box and walk to the building. But it's been a very successful program. It's operated just a little over a year. Is it a year or 2 years? 2 years. Just operated 2 years. And it's been a very successful program. We're happy to give people a tour of that, plus the jail. Lincoln County came out last year. They brought several commissioners. Marlene Sweeter, the auditor, came out, plus deputy state's attorney. And just to go through it, they were in the process of considering putting up a jail, so we just kind of wanted to take a look at that, too. It doesn't have to be part of the process. Care center would be very impressive, I think. And again, it may have to be for other areas of the state. It may have to be a cooperation effort amongst several counties in order to put something like that together. But I think that possibility exists.
Where did you get the funding?
Funsley, we have a lot of funding.
From where?
Was it money? A big amount of private dollars.
So did you guys just go to the different, how did you coordinate that to get private agencies?
Well, our sheriff and our health and human services groups are very tight, so they want to work together on that. We had a gentleman that stepped up. He put in $1.5 million for it to begin with for the remodel of the building. And he said, if this is enough, you come back. And we got it all done. $700,000 short. Went back to him. He wrote the check on the spot. So unfortunately, he has passed since then. We'll help his family. We'll stay in the realm. We got the facility. It's operating efficiently.
So, and for continuing services, where does that money come
from? Funding comes from. Well, and we still we get grants. Lots of different places. This is important. The programs are consistent.
Good.
I have a question. It goes back to the mental health and the problem that we run into. We're a very rural county. We don't refer a lot of people. Most of our people are in other areas, in schools, visiting with people in Pennington County, whatever, and they're referred there by their professionals life about it, and the one last time she threatened to not do any more middles for Lyman County, which I got in trouble with my state's attorney. I had to apologize. She's like, I don't know what to do.
How do we get the information? Like, they're so, it's just your residence, you have to pay for it.
I don't know where a PO box is. We can give a PO box to anywhere. Like, that's not a residence address either.
I don't know how to circumvent something.
Yeah, I mean, those are the things for residency. You kind of look at driver's license, registered to vote, where they live, do they have a lease? And if they don't have these things, then, you know, it's tough to it's tough to pay that, you know. So I think that's an individual decision for the county. You know, you could make the, say, we don't have enough information to determine this person a resident, we're not paying. And then you would get caught up, you could get caught up in litigation. But they don't want to litigate that. They're just going to say, well, we're not going to do it anymore. We're not going to pay this. And that's their, you know, that, like the person said at the beginning, you know, you're in a position of power, right? So you write the check. And if you're not going to write the check, then they use what power they have to say, well, we're not going to do it anymore. And then those are just going to have to be worked out. You know, I don't know that I have a good answer for that. But you aren't obligated to pay if they're not a resident. And a resident is defined by certain things. So you just got to make those decisions on that individual case basis and see what's best.
You know, from our perspective in Yankton, we get a lot of people from the state who come to Yankton, and a lot of these people who are in this position are transient and friends like that. And so from our perspective from Yankton, it's not fair that we have to pay from everywhere else either. So, I mean, that's the other side.
Well, I do think it's crap that Yankton and Lincoln get stuck with all the bills and they have to do it.
And we have probably a lot more than you. I mean, that happens about every meeting, so it's when we can find that connection, that's what we do. So it's a lot of money. Yeah, and you see that every meeting.
Didn't I just do that? Yeah, I could email him to you. All right, well, thank you. Thanks for the time. Great time. We were supposed to be done at 9:15. It's 9:25.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I think I'll leave it.
Did you talk to Mike about the break? Mike about the state on the 2815? You were a part. Remember me, I'm Ray with the. You were a part of the 2815. Yeah. A couple years ago,
Yes, that's a big jump. I have to say, I'll be impactful.
You staying here?
Yeah.
Okay. Ray recorded it. This one. I'm like, he's like.
Okay.